good friend of ours from Queens Chronicle, Good Times Magazine, and other outlets in and around the New York area. A very, very busy writer. He covers travel and accounting as well as sports and entertainment. A guy with his kind of variety fits in perfectly with the FDH Lounge. We appreciate his indulgence here as we're running a tad behind with our segments tonight, so we apologize for that. But good to have on our good friend Lloyd Carroll. Always a pleasure. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Rick, always great chatting with you. I got to tell you, this is Harvard NBA night. I learned quite a bit listening to William, and his points were very valid. I learned some inside stuff there about why Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns went belly up. Great show.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Yeah, it's always fun. It's we kind of you know have to push ourselves a little bit when we're talking to William, because again, I don't really know finance as much, but it's great. I feel like we can get kind of a window for the viewers who are probably a lot like myself and are interested in knowing more and really don't. And then Liz Klayman earlier tonight, it was a coincidence. It turns out that William was a professor of Liz Klayman's back in the day here. We had no idea when we were booking this stuff. Steve Servillo, the New York Bureau, you know, he's just finding all these folks with intertwined relationships that we don't even know about, Lloyd.
Well, I've never met, I'd like to meet William down the road, but it's funny. Tonight, I hope I'm not going to bore the listeners with more finance. But I tell you, the Fred Wilpon story, incredible. The accounting aspects of sports really commingling tonight.
Lloyd, let's start there before we get to the Super Bowl with you, because actually, as it turns out, you know, kind of a small world, another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis, who actually, as I mentioned before, for folks who tuned in today and have heard the promos, a new show Monday through Friday, noon to 1 Eastern time here on the Sports Talk Network. Steve's a guy who, again, is on, he gets called upon a lot on WFAN and some of the other media outlets in New York for breaking down some of these things, since he's got a legal background whenever anything like this comes up. He was talking about the Wilpon situation. I understand he was on with Francesa for like 20 minutes yesterday. He was telling me a little bit about it off air. It's one of these things over a period of time, and I think you and I have talked about this previously. We've always thought that this Madoff thing was going to come back on the Wilpons in some way. Now, as I remember it previously, I remember hearing from some folks previously that thought that maybe the Wilpons, if they had to open up their books, it would show that they were undercapitalized because they lost money to Madoff. But now, if I understand correctly, he stands accused by some of the victims of Madoff of being a beneficiary of these schemes, wittingly or unwittingly.
Well, this is the key issue, and this is, but it had come out a long time ago. Irving Picard, who's a very respected trustee in the accounting business, I can tell you that, putting on my CPA hat and taking off my sports hat, Picard is very well respected in our profession. Having said that, Picard had revealed quite a long time ago, even though it was like almost a game of Chicken Little among the New York sports media, guessing how many hundreds of millions of dollars that Fred Wilpon had lost. You know, it became $300 million, $700 million. It was just ludicrous without any accounting proof of this. Well, you know, my attitude was, how come Sterling Equities did not liquidate any of their real estate properties if indeed the situation was that dire? Nobody can come up with an answer for me. And the reason that they did not have to liquidate is because it turned out, as you point out, either wittingly or unwittingly, that they had withdrawn $48.5 million or $47.5 million more than they had put into the fund. So they turned out to be net winners. That was revealed quite a while ago, and I think up until October, the thinking was, well, gee, they'll just have to get back that difference. It's the worst-case fallback scenario. Hey, I mean, look, Oliver Perez is making $36 million over 3 years. That's not exactly a franchise breaker by itself. Where things have gotten interesting, and this still is a muddied issue, I know it's what Steve had to say about this, but is the fact that I wonder if, and this is a big if, that Picard thinks that the Wilpons may have steered business to Bernie's way, may have known what Bernie was doing and chose to look the other way. The Wilpons are not helped by the fact that they dealt with Sam Israel, who faked a suicide 2 years ago with his Bayou hedge fund, and they came out net winners ahead on that, $13 million. So things are starting to get very interesting. My question is, I wonder if Picard is going to go after the Wilpons for treble punitive damages. And is a U.S. attorney going to come in here and possibly indict them? We don't. I mean, this is to be seen.
You know, it's one of those things. No wonder, Lloyd. There's a lot of things that only make sense in retrospect. But for everybody that was peppering the Wilbons with questions over time, and they were just kind of like, nah, we good, nothing to see here. Yeah, no wonder they didn't want to get into details on this stuff. The details ended up being messier, it turns out, potentially, than anything that people thought that they were having, you know, when people thought they were having money problems.
No question. And to be fair, the Wilbons did say in their Friday press conference, which I listened on the phone, but there was no way that Dave Newman, the VP of Communications, was going to call him. He calls on Marty Noble 15 times and Adam Rubin 8 times and wouldn't let me ask one question, probably because of my accounting background, or maybe thought the Queen's Chronicle was not prestigious enough to be taking part with the big boys. Who knows? Anyway, what I think did change was the fact that the Wilbons really thought the worst case scenario would be they get back the $47.5 million. I call it the Oliver Perez deal. Well, you know, it turns out they could be on the hook for a lot more than that, both kind of like the way Ivan Boesky was back in the day. We don't know. If there was an insider angle to this, they could be facing jail time.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when you get involved in insider trading. And, you know, if you're a party to any of these things like this, and again, we strain to say it's all ifs at this point in time.
Exactly.
We don't know.
It is speculative. Right? We don't want to make it sound like this is definitive. We're just throwing out some scenarios. But the scenarios that seemed so implausible a week ago now seem just a bit more plausible.
Well, I can tell you, it just keeps getting funnier and funnier if you're following, as am I, Fake Wilbon on Twitter. All of the commentary coming out of there has been pretty amazing. Turning our attention here to the Super Bowl, and of course, you've been very immersed, especially in the AFC picture, covering the Jets up until the AFC Championship game as they were in there. I have to say this, Lloyd, as somebody who is an email subscriber to both of your columns from the Queen's Chronicle and Good Times Magazine here, and look forward to each of those every week. The one thing that you've written about this that it doesn't appear to square, I must say, from what I've seen, the notion that any of the executives at Fox are crapping themselves about New York and Chicago being out of the mix here. I'll tell you what, I understand Pittsburgh, and I always say Milwaukee / Green Bay, because realistically, okay, that's an adjunct of the Milwaukee market here.
Absolutely.
Taken together, still pretty small. So I get your point. But these are national brands. When you're talking about the Packers, and believe me, I'm a Browns fan, as much as it pains me to say that about the Steelers, undeniably they are a major national brand. Mm-hmm. They've both won Super Bowls in the last 15 years, so that you've got that going for them. There's a specialness to it there that's going to grip the casual fan. I understand what you're saying about
that's what you just kind of hit the point. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not questioning the whole NFL heritage. God bless the late Vince Lombardi. I get that. Rah-rah, sis, boom-bah. I'm talking about the marginal fans, big market sell. I mean, if you're a Fox, if you put yourself in David Hill's position, and you're 60 minutes away from having New York and Chicago, the league's two biggest markets, meeting in the big game, with all that advertising, with all the hype and hoopla, these networks, they're only going to get big ratings no matter what for a Super Bowl. We know that. But it becomes a game of, will it be the most watched ever? I mean, that has a certain cachet that every network wants. Don't forget, Fox also wants to springboard their spring programming from this. There's a lot riding here that the marginals make a big difference. And that I think that the media's kind of looked the other way. They buried this. But I had to bring it up. And, of course, everyone's going to deny it, and they'll all sing Kumbaya, hold hands for the Pittsburgh and Green Bay. But that's a reality that everybody's just hiding from.
Well, you know, far be it for me to ever accuse you of New York area chauvinism, Lloyd, so I will not. But, I mean, it's a thing where, I don't know. I understand your perspective on that, but as somebody who's on the heartland and goes to Super Bowl parties with a lot of these casual fans, some of whom I really like to goof on because of how casual they are exactly, I mean, you look at it like the Bears, who, granted, they were there a couple of years ago, but what have they really got going for them in any kind of a gripping way aside from Brian Urlacher is kind of a cause celeb in the league? But this is a team, it's kind of funny they made it as far as they did, because outside of that defensive line, this is a team that was basically like a shade above average in many areas. Really not what you would consider to be a team playing on Championship Sunday. The Jets, okay, the Jets come with every storyline you could possibly want. I'll give you that. But even the Jets haven't been in a Super Bowl Bowl since 1969, so it's not like people were used to kind of seeing them there. I'm not saying that people would react to the Jets being there like they did the Seahawks or the Falcons or the Cardinals, but there's still a thing of people aren't used to seeing them there. I mean, for every point that you raise about that, I think I can raise a counterpoint about why Packers, Steelers, that's something where casual fans coast to coast everywhere are just inured to think that this is huge, that they're playing one another.
Look, yeah, again, we could argue this seven ways till Sunday. I mean, I should point out, I grew up in Philadelphia, so I don't really have the New York.
No, I know. And I'm not accusing.
No, I just want to just for real full disclosure, and we can talk about Philadelphia until the cows come home. But having said all this, Rex Ryan, all right, let's even take the New York out of the picture. For the this guy brought in record ratings. I was in Cancun, Mexico for Travel Story, and had a little vacation the second week of January. And I ran into a couple from Denver who normally would not watch, not counting kind of the Super Bowl, but would not watch a routine playoff game unless their beloved Broncos were in there. It was an older couple, and this was just before the Jets-Patriots, and they said, we want to watch this game. And Rex Ryan playing the whole blustering, blustery wrestler kind of guy. It's between Belichick and myself. The point is, Rex knows how to sell the steak to people who normally wouldn't care to eat meat. I mean, he's an incredible salesman. Look, CBS got the highest ratings ever thanks to the Jets. But well, part of it, obviously, the New York marketplace, but part of it also because of Rex Ryan. The man is a master salesman.
Well, my God, I can't believe the position you're putting me in where I'm having to, I mean, I loathe the Steelers more than life itself, but I hear you say that, and I think to myself, the Steelers didn't have a significant part in that huge rating?
By the way, the Steelers were a far better team than the Jets. I said that point blank. I mean, if you're just arguing on football, I would agree. You know what? In terms of football, these probably were the two best teams given the way things went this year. I mean, the Green Bay Packers' seed was really belied with how good they really were. The Jets, I think what you saw is what you got, and they just happened to play well and beat the Colts and beat the Patriots. And, but frankly, they were like, you know, can't cry. They did better than really what I expected. So having said that, you know, in terms of an absolute football game, probably they have the two best teams in terms of ratings, money, helping the American economy. Do you know what the Chicago and New York papers would have done every week with every day after the Super Bowl with 20 pages of inserts? I mean, this would have been a real boon to the economy here.
Yeah, oh, I understand that. You know, as far as it goes with the Jets and the Steelers too, you know, putting on my Bitterman hat for a moment, you know, some of my Jet fan friends didn't quite understand why I was going off on them as bitterly as I did for that choke job and not showing up for the first hour 15 of that game. But I'll tell you what, you know, it's one of those things where it just happens every time the Steelers make it to the Super Bowl. Generally, the Patriots will be the best team in the AFC that year, but somebody will do their dirty work for them. Bill Belichick absolutely pwns the Pittsburgh Steelers, and yet every time they friggin' make it to the Super Bowl, they never have to go through the Patriots because somebody else played spoiler. So while all the Jets fans are real happy and, woo, we made it back to the AFC Championship game, guys like me and all the Steeler haters nationwide are pissed off that they played spoiler, that the better team didn't have to play the Steelers there. There's a lot of venom toward the Jets for this.
I think the Jet players would admit that they partied a little too hard. They treated that like the Super Bowl. Kind of like what happened in 2003 when the Yankees beat the Red Sox, the Aaron Boone home run, didn't even show up for the World Series against the Florida Marlins.
Yeah. You know what? I like me some cross-sport parallels. That's a good one right there. I think that's a very good example of that. And it's just a thing where, you know, to my friends who are Jet fans, I said to them the week before, guys, I said, man, nothing against you, but my primary thing is stopping the Steelers, so I'm rooting for the Patriots. I loathe Bill Belichick from his time in Cleveland. You know, I wish somebody would set that trash bag on fire one of these summers here, but for the right now, I'm rooting for him. And, you know, the Steelers never have to face the Patriots, never have to face the team that owns them whenever they go to the Super Bowl. It's just uncanny. They're 3-for-3 in that regard.
Well, you know what? They get a good enough place, I guess, post position to berth, whatever you want to call it, that they avoid the dirty work. So you got to give credit for at least playing well enough to do that. Hey, look, the Jets hadn't beaten the Steelers in Pittsburgh in 40 years. They finally beat them once this year. That's more than I ever thought I'd see in my lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, that was a heck of a streak that ended up coming to an end. And, you know, to think that it was going to happen twice in the span of a month when it hadn't, as you said, happened in 40 years was probably asking a little bit too much. You do have Pittsburgh that beat, again, they didn't have to beat New England. And, you know, if people want to call me a bitterman, whatever, but I'm going to drop an asterisk on whatever they accomplished because of it, I'm just going to do that. But I will say they beat two of the three best teams in the AFC en route to the Super Bowl. I think we all kind of understood during the season that there was a big dividing line, that the best two teams in the AFC East and the AFC North were above, and then there was the rest of the conference. You got Green Bay, as you said, that kind of proved themselves late in the year with that string of victories over the Giants, who were my preseason pick to win the NFC. Imagine how foolish I feel. But beating them in that game, beating Philadelphia for a second time, and then Atlanta and Chicago in the playoffs, you could make a case for Green Bay as the best team in the NFC just because of who they beat and the path that they went through. It is kind of jarring to see the number six seed in the inferior conference as about a field goal favorite in the Super Bowl. That feels kind of weird just looking at it. But it's one of these things here where you could make a case that we're seeing the two best teams, but it's weird. In a way, it kind of feels like March Madness, where you're not always sure at the very end. You know that the hottest team won the championship, and sometimes we've seen it in baseball in recent years. Actually, that Florida Marlins team from 2003 is a good example of that. Don't know that they were the best team over the course of a season, but they were the hottest team in October. I wonder if we're looking at a little bit of the same dynamic with these two teams here.
You probably are. It's funny. I was thinking, I saw the Jets play Green Bay. I remember it was Halloween. Uh-huh. Green Bay won 9-0. It was one of the worst play games. And trust me, if you watch that game, you think neither of these teams should even be in the playoffs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that game, again, I didn't get to see any of it. It was just a matter of I saw it on the scoreboard that day. Everything I heard was just that it was like singularly just so fugly. I mean, how did that game come off that way? It seems like an aberration based on the way both teams played the rest of the year. What were some of the dynamics at play that day?
You know, it's hard to say. Neither team completed very many passes. Nick Folk missed a couple of field goals. It just seemed like both teams were either looking forward to going to a Halloween party or hungover from a party the previous night. It was just, again, one of the worst played games I'd ever seen. Talk about two teams who were obviously came with a hair's breadth meeting each other in the Super Bowl. It's just kind of ironic.
It is. It is. And it's a kind of game that, again, it tells you probably nothing about the state of those two teams subsequently and the way that they look right now. It would tell you nothing about the Jets if they were in the Super Bowl. It probably tells you very little about Green Bay also. Although, again, the clampdown defensively with Green Bay, I think, you know, I had not really trusted this defense as much coming into this season just because of their general youth, but they've really kind of made it work for them in terms of their speed and everything that they've had going on there and the way that they've constructed this team and a secondary that is anything but the way that you figure that a Super Bowl team would have it at this point in time. So it's amazing what the Packers have been able to do defensively in the second year with Capers in his 3-4 scheme. And I guess the one thing that you could say about them that is representative based on what they showed that day against the Jets is what they can do and how they can paralyze another team's offense and quarterback.
No question. They were fine. Obviously, if you shut out a team, that tells you something. But the funny thing is the Jets were actually able to move the ball all right. It's just that they couldn't get it in the end zone and shanked a couple of field goals, and that was it. It was just, frankly, like I said, I couldn't get very excited about that game. If it weren't for a decent spread in the press room, I might have gone home early.
Well, it's always good when they have those things out there, preferably shrimp cocktail and things of that nature.
It wasn't that good, but at least.
Yeah. Well, you know, as long as it's, I'm always happy if I can find a spread that's got some good kosher dogs out there. That's good food for.
You know, you would think you'd find more of that in either New York or Philadelphia, but you don't get, unfortunately, kosher cuisine is hard to find. I think we should lobby for that, Rick.
Well, exactly. You know, and I'm not even the guy that you would picture would be eating that. I mean, I'm a perennial recipient of the Good Goy Award, so I'm not a guy that you'd think. You know, would be lining up for it, but I just got a taste for it. Best place for it, by the way, they grill them at PNC Park in Pittsburgh. The grilled kosher dogs are just out of this world, dude.
You know, I got finally a reason to go watch the Pirates play. I like that. You've given me incentive. I'm going to tell Jim Trinich, the PR guy there, that's it. I'm coming.
If more people knew about that, if people knew how good their kosher dogs were, they would single-handedly become a middle market team overnight, Lloyd. You'd have enough people coming through the gates. You'd have another 25 mil on the payroll. They could hang on to their guys, and they could reacquire some of the great ones they've had to trade away.
I think that JetBlue's flights would be packed, particularly on Sundays, to get out there from JFK to Pittsburgh just for that.
Oh, yeah. PNC is a beautiful park, actually. I mean, I hate to, you know, as I've said before, I hate to put over anything in Pittsburgh, but I cannot lie. It's a beautiful park. I like it better than, I still call it the Jake here in town. I still like it better than that one, but, you know, it's really, again, as we look to the Super Bowl this week, and of course, you are stationed in the media capital of the world, so you know, regardless of your perspective and mine being a little bit different on the TV end of this, you know, I say that again, you have a very trained eye on all these media storylines. Today, of course, I believe today was media day for it, and I'm just very wary, I have to say, as one of the big storylines. We saw this whole contrived, stupid thing 10 years ago, and again, I'm a bitterman who hates the Ravens also, but nothing nauseated me more than the redemption of Ray Lewis a year after two guys were dead at the Super Bowl as a result of his crew. A year later, just because they're in the Super Bowl, he's a good guy. I fear some of the same here revisionism with Ben Roethlisberger and the way that the media is going to just jump on this thing and try and go for the contrived happy end.
Well, ironically, the commissioner didn't exactly help in his redemption here. Apparently, Goodell made it very clear that he doesn't want to go to Disneyland with or Disney World with Ben. So I don't know. I think you got a sense. I think Goodell was thinking along with you on this one, Rick. By the way, speaking of Pittsburgh, have you been to the Warhol Art Gallery, which is near the ballpark?
I have not been. What's that like?
Andy Warhol, the famous pop artist, grew up in Pittsburgh. And it's funny. Now, I'm not a big art museum guy, but this is an art museum for people who hate art museums. I mean, this has pop culture. This has Andy's photos of Marilyn Monroe and the famous Campbell soup cans and Mao Zedong. I mean, this is I highly recommend it. I think that if you go to any either Steelers game or it's within walking distance of the ballpark, that and the Carnegie Science Center. So
okay.
I'm going to give a shout-out here to Pittsburgh, even though their media relations person, Beverly Jones, never returns my phone calls.
I was going to ask you if they had the Campbell's soup cans there. That's the first thing we all think of whenever anybody mentions Warhol. When you talk about, you know, a museum for people who hate museums, the other thing that makes me think about that, because my brother and his family live in Atlanta, they got a place down there, and I forget the name of it. It's on the tip of my tongue here. It's a Civil War type thing. You sit in this theater in the round, and they've got a painting that goes all the way around you, but it's like three-dimensional. They like build out from the painting, and it's this Civil War landscape, and you sit there while the whole theater revolves around it over the course of like a half hour, and it spotlights on different parts of it and the panorama that's coming out from the painting as they talk about the Battle of Atlanta. That's the kind of stuff, man. We need more cool museums like that, you know, that people can relate to.
You know, it reminds me, I haven't been in Atlanta in 25 years. I think maybe this might be a good year to go back.
Hey, well, you know what? As if you needed a reason, WrestleMania 27 in the Georgia Dome on April 3rd. Bob Barker's going to be there. He said so on our show 2 weeks ago. So if you needed a reason.
Well, there you go. I'm thinking maybe actually going a little later in April. I have a break. It's still tax season early April, my other life, so we have to wait till after April 15th. But I do appreciate the heads up on WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I wonder who's going to be running, what the name bouts are going to be. I mean, unfortunately, the WWE has not really developed the line of superstars in recent years that we've long grown accustomed to.
By the way, I should just mention this in passing. Atlanta Cyclorama, and if you go to atlantacyclorama.org, that's what it is. That painting with the three-dimensional thing here, it is pretty cool. I tell you what, they broke something last night here, Lloyd, whether it's just a rumor or whatever the case may be. It might be Sting against The Undertaker in sort of an interpromotional dream bout here 10 years after the demise of WCW. That might get some of the casuals to come back in to take a look.
Particularly in Atlanta, because, you know, there obviously we forget that was really the capital of the other guys there, of WCW. I mean, it's funny, it's been so long, we forget that fact.
That's true. But, That is really something that could make it unique in that kind of a way, too. By the way, I just got breaking news here. Paul Belfi just IMing me this new SmackDown announced team, Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, and Booker T. You talk about guys coming back in. Booker T and Kevin Nash, they just re-signed for the Royal Rumble. So that shows you something, Lloyd, as far as the WCW nostalgia factor with WrestleMania coming up.
There you go. Well, the way things are going, if we could dig back, we might see Larry Zbyszko, Bruno Sammartino coming back.
Yeah. With that famous Larry Zbyszko work rate, because 10-minute stalls in the middle of a match are exactly what this audience with its attention span are waiting for at this point. Paul further elaborates that Booker T will be the Jerry Lawler of SmackDown. That's the plan. All I can say is I hope when they do matches together at pay-per-views that Booker T calls him Jerome again. I loved when he did that when they were doing the King versus King angle. That was pretty sweet.
He called him Jerome Lawler. I like that. That is good.
Yeah, that was great when he was calling him Jerome in that haughty King voice.
Well, I remember Larry Zbyszko used the word redundant in an interview. I said, this is great stuff.
Yeah, redundant. Larry Zbyszko introducing, words about, introducing the concept of corporate restructuring into professional wrestling,
I like that, although my favorite was Kevin Sullivan, who used, I believe, the Confessions of St. Augustine as his basic light and darkness bit. So you never know. Actually, he said he studied English at Boston College, and that's where he came up with the idea. So I tell you, you'll do learn a lot watching pro wrestling.
You said that previously on the show, wasn't? Although I was thinking for whatever extent, I was thinking it was Chaucer, but yeah, it was Sullivan was working like classical English stuff into that devil character, wasn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing which made wrestling so great back in the day, that it did such a great job appealing at two levels. Obviously, the marks, the people who believed it and didn't really have a sophistication, but also some of us who did go to college and beyond and enjoyed the subtle satire. I mean, it was a great in-joke.
Oh, it was. It absolutely was. And, anything that works on a couple of different levels is a good thing, obviously. Let's bring it full circle here, Lloyd. Get your thoughts for the Super Bowl. As much as I hate to say it, as much as I hate to make the prediction, the Steelers just have a way of causing other teams to go into a brain lock. I got to think, if Green Bay goes down there on the fast track and executes and does what they should do, they should riddle that secondary. I see Mike McCarthy probably overthinking this a little bit, getting too much in love with, we got to have some ball control. We don't want to score 49 points in only 20 minutes. That would be bad. I just fear them outsmarting themselves, and unfortunately I'm going to say Steelers 24-20. What's your prediction?
Well, it's funny. It's a hard game to really wrap yourself around. This is not the Steelers of Terry Bradshaw's era. This isn't the Green Bay Packers of Bart Starr or even Brett Favre back in his day, back in the prime. Hard for me to really get, but I like Aaron Rodgers. I think he'll have fewer distractions. So, you know what? I'm going to go with Green Bay 28 and the Steelers 17. I'll go
All
with
right.
that.
Well, I know that you know football, Lloyd, so this is excellent. From your lips to God's ears. And I'll tell you what, to bring it full circle here to let you know, this is the first night ever on the show when we have been accompanying, or first of all, we're archiving the video for the show here tonight, which is going to be great. First time in our 133 episodes. Also, our Chiron, for the first time, is being accompanied by a headshot. So we have the headshot up there on you, and we can see your mug and the stash that led you, I understand, last year at the upfronts to tell Tom Selleck that you'd been told that you look like him.
Well, we had old fun. Tom was a very good sport on this, and I actually went over to Tom and said, Tom, I wanted to introduce myself. I know people have been confusing us for years, and I wanted to introduce myself. And he was very good about it. He's a great sense of humor.
Outstanding. All right. Hey, Lloyd, it is always a blast. It's been too long since we had you on, and we'll get you back on real soon. Always a pleasure, of course, Lloyd Carroll from the Queens Chronicle, Good Times Magazine, countless other fine publications. Thank you so much, my man.
Rick, a pleasure, and look forward to doing it again. I'm glad you read my column every week.
I do every week, along with a lot of other people. Excellent. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate
it. My pleasure, Rick.
Lloyd Carroll, our good friend from the Queens Chronicle, Good Times Magazine, et al. You can always, always, always have an entertaining talk with good old Lloyd.